Mishnah Tesvav, first parak, Perkei Avos, tells us as follows. Shammai Omer, that Shammai says, Ase Terascha Keva, make your Torah study a fixed practice. Emor Ma'at, Vase Harbe, say little, do much. Vahavi Mekabalas Kol Ha'adam, B'sever Panim Yafot, receive everyone with a cheerful face. We know that whenever we come across the name Shammai and Hillel, we also find Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai as well. Now Shammai and Hillel lived in the same generation. Shammai, who lived approximately from 50 BCE before Common Era until 30 CE, in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, was considered to be the Av Bestin, or the vice president. This is one of the Zugot, as Hillel was his pair. Hillel was the Nasi, or the president. Now, who lived longer, Hillel or Shammai? Hillel passed away, and Shammai, who was at the time the Av Bestin, took over this position and became the Nasi, the president, the leader of the Jewish people. So great was Shammai that there was no one really to fill in the position of Av Bestin after he resumed the position of Nasi. And this was for approximately the last 10 years of his life. So although on the surface when we studied the stories of Shammai and Hillel, we initially would think that Shammai and Hillel did not get along. Furthermore, many of us feel that since we hold like Hillel, or base Hillel, probably Shammai was the less knowledgeable of the two. But we find this is not the case. The Gemara in the end of Masechta Brachos discusses another dispute between Hillel and Shammai with regard to Birchat HaMazon, with benching. When a person is on the top of, let's say, Mount Everest, and you had a nice peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and then you decide to climb down, and then, ugh, I completely forgot. Schein vergessen. I didn't bench. So do we require you to climb all the way to the top of that mountain? According to Shammai, yes, you do. You must go all the way back to where you ate, even if it's on the very top of a mountain. Hillel says, this is kind of strange. After all, just because you didn't bench in that place, you're going to require this individual to have to climb all the way back up the mountain? Rather, Hillel says, it's much more logical. Let them bench, say, Birchas HaMazon wherever they are. And Shammai so brilliantly retorted, he said, if that individual would have left a purse, his wallet filled with $100 bills, you think he would have hesitated to climb back up that mountain to get it? And that's only Chayisha. That's only something which is temporary. Monetary, wealth. So certainly when it comes to acknowledging HaKadosh Baruch Hu and doing a mitzvah, which is eternal, which is forever, alachas kama kama, a person should be required to climb up that mountain. And Hillel looked at Shammai and realized the brilliance of this man. Now even though we do see that Shammai very often has a much stronger and sharper interpretation, we nonetheless hold like Beis Hillel. And the reason for this, among others, is based on the principle of Achrei Rabbah Mahatos, that we go after the majority opinion. Whenever we have a dispute, let's say with the Chachamim, a group of sages, and one individual sage, Halacha Karabim, we generally hold like the majority opinion. And therefore, Beit Hillel, who had more students, therefore, we hold like him. Another important message of Shammai, Beit Shammai, Hillel, and Beit Hillel is that they are really one and the same. In other words, anyone who was in the Beit Hillel, or the study hall of Hillel, did and said exactly like his teacher. And so too when it came to Shammai. It's a very important lesson, especially when it came for myself graduating from a rabbinical school, that it's not just any old degree. A person gets an associate's, a bachelor's degree. and maybe they'll give an $18 donation once in a while to that university. The reality is, other than the fact that their diploma's hanging up on their wall, they really have very little connection to that institution. However, when it comes to a person who carries with them a rabbinical degree, they represent that yeshiva. And therefore, just like Shammai, Beit Shammai, his students, followed his every action, his every word. And just like Hillel, the students, or Beit Hillel, did exactly the same. This is the tremendous responsibility of any Rav, that it's not just that he's a rabbi, but he represents an institution of higher learning. And his actions, or inactions, will have a direct reflection on the way people perceive his yeshiva, his rabbinical school. We read this Mishnah Tesvav, and it told us three things. The Tiferes Yisrael points out, it's very interesting, that even Mishnayos much before this, such as the very second Mishnah of this Masechet, Perkei Avos, the famous words that the world stands on three pillars, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim, explains it to Tiferes Yisrael that these traditions are passed down from one generation to the next. And Shammai here as well, although he frames these three things using different words, the reality is he's also explaining the three pillars, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. We start off with the beginning of the Mishnah, Ase Torascha Keva. That's clearly, by making your Torah study a fixed practice, Shammai is emphasizing the first pillar, the pillar of Torah. And then Shammai continues and says, Emar Ma'at Masi Harbe, say little and do much. When it comes to Avodas Hashem, to the Avodah, to the service of God, it's not sufficient to speak and to give a good show in your words. But you must not only talk the talk, but even more so and more important, walk the walk. And finally, the statement of Shammai, "Mimikabelas kol adam b'sefer panim yafos," to smile, to give everyone a cheerful look. Of course, that's a form of Gemilas Chasadim, the third and final pillar that the world stands. Brought down in the Bar Tanura, explaining what does it mean to make your Torah keva or set, explains the Bar Tanura, Shehei Iker Esacha Biyom V'Lailu B'Torah. A person's main thrust of their day and night should be engaged in Torah study. Ukshehei Yageya Min Halimud. And only after you're weak and weary from your learning, then, tasa malacha. You no longer have any zitzplesh for learning another taisus, another pasuk in the chumash. Then you can do some work. But not the reverse. Veloshia ikar asacha b'malacha. Not that you should put forth all of your energy, first and foremost, in your work. And then, ukshetivna min ha-malacha, when maybe you have a few minutes to spare from your work, then you'll do a little bit of Torah study. Explains the Bar Tanura, this is the message of Shammai of Ase Torascha Keva. You should put all of your energy, all of your resources, everything that you have, into your study of Torah. And it's no coincidence that this is the reason why some of the greatest people that we read about and learn about in the Torah, what was their profession? They were shepherds. Why did they decide to tend sheep for a living? After all, maybe they could have been a lawyer or a doctor. And certainly one message of why the greatest of our leaders, Moshe Rabbeinu and our Avos, that they were involved in being shepherds, is because they had to care for little animals, to show empathy and compassion. For even animals would give the lesson in their life, the experience to carry forward, to care for, and be empathetic and compassionate to their people, the people around them that they lead. But I believe another reason why the position of being a shepherd was so prevalent among these great individuals was because of the opportunity to learn Torah. When it comes to being a shepherd, you go out into the field, find a nice shady tree, and you let your animals graze on this property. And they're there for long extended periods of time. And you as a shepherd, you're responsible to make sure that they don't get lost, they don't get stolen. But that gives you a lot of free time. Free time to do what? Maybe just sit back and stare at the clouds. But when it came to the Gedolim, they used that as an opportunity to grow in Torah. And therefore, it's so important to pick a profession which will enable a person to also be engaged in spiritual pursuits and learning Torah also during the day. A colleague of mine in my previous school in Connecticut used to always be bothered when people would ask the question, "What do you do? What are you?" And people would innocently answer, "I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm a dentist, whatever." He would answer, "I'm an Eved Hashem." You're telling me that the fact that I'm a lawyer, that's my essence, that's all I am? That's not my primary purpose on this earth. My primary purpose is to serve Hashem and to fulfill the mitzvos and to learn Torah. What do I do for a living is exactly that, to make a living, to put bread on the table, to support my family, to educate them in yeshivos. But the primary purpose of my life is not to go out into the business world and make millions of dollars. It's to be an Eved Hashem. It's brought down by Rav Moshe Belgolominsky, another interpretation of what it means, Asi Terascha Keva. He brings down a story of a child that goes with his father to London. And there in London, he notices a huge building. And on top of that building is a clock, known as Big Ben. The child looked at the father and said, "I don't understand. Why is it so high up in the sky? I have to crane my neck, it hurts me, I have to look all the way up, it strains my back. Wouldn't it be more logical that the person who made this clock should put it all the way down to the ground at eye level? And this way, I can casually walk by, glance at the time, and that would be a terrific thing. What's the significance of being so high up in the sky?" So his father looked at the child and said, "Son, you don't understand. You see, if Big Ben was on eye level, was in arm's reach, then people would look at the Big Ben, or maybe medium-sized Ben, and then they would gaze upon their wristwatches, and they would say, it's clear that Big Ben is 4 minutes fast. And what would they do? They would go to this clock, and they would change it in order that it would be the same time as the time on their wrists. However, since it's so high up in the sky, no one can reach that high, and therefore, they have no choice but to adhere to that exact time, to the second, to the minute, and even if their clocks are a little bit off, they will adjust their watches to it, and not it to their watches." Explains Rav Moshe Belgolominsky that this is also the message of our Mishnah, of Ase Terascha Keva, that when it comes to Torah, there are Tariag mitzvos, and some of them, for us, and for some individuals, are easier than others. Some mitzvos are very difficult, and some of them we embrace and we love to do with ease. Ase Terascha Keva means that even though sometimes we may be short of the mark and not do the mitzvos, we have to realize, just like that clock, we cannot fix it, but rather we must bring ourselves to be on the right time as the Torah. This is also the explanation of the Mishnah that says previously to be as the students of Aaron, Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oivis Abrios, Umikarban La Torah. That the Mishnah tells us that we must bring people close to the Torah. It doesn't say that the Torah needs to be brought to them. That I have my own lifestyle, and I feel comfortable the way I am, and I'm going to make certain amendments and changes to the Torah so it should fit into my lifestyle. No. Rather, umikarvan la Torah. The Torah stays as is. The mitzvos are as is. We are not allowed to change them. We may not always do the right thing, but ultimately, mekarvan la Torah, we should change ourselves and come closer to it, and never chas v'shalom the other way around. The Moser Avos gives another interpretation of the words Aseh Terascha Keva. The word Keva could actually mean to steal. As it says in Proverbs and Mishlei, Hayikva Adam Elokim, should a person steal from God? And it uses the word Hayikva, Keva. It's very possible that when Shammai is saying Aseh Terascha Keva, he's saying and addressing a question that many may have. They may say, you know, I don't have all this time to learn. I'm busy, I have appointments, I have meetings. How am I supposed to learn any Torah? And the answer is, Aseh Terascha Keva. Steal time to learn Torah. Instead of wasting minutes in between meetings, you have 15 minutes. Don't just sit there and check your emails for the 17th time in the hour, or just go on the internet and just surf the web. Use that time. Steal those minutes in order that you'll be able to learn more. It's a famous story of an individual that only had 15 minutes to steal. And he turned to the great Hasidic sage and said, what should I learn for that small amount of time? Because I don't have an extra second to spare. And he said, you should learn Musar. Learn from Sifrei Musar, and then you'll realize that you really should be learning for more than those 15 minutes. It's brought down, furthermore, in the Bar Tanura, the second explanation of this Mishnah. The Mishnah which told us, Emor ma'at v'asi harbe, that a person should not say so much, but rather they should do a whole lot. Ask the Bar Tanura, where do we find an individual who models this particular theory? It's just like we find by Avraham Avinu. Who was Avraham Avinu? What did he do that was so unique? That when he was 99 years old and he had a painful procedure, a Brit Milah, in which most people would be focused on their own pain, there he was sitting outside of his tent looking to fulfill the mitzvah of Hachnasas Arachim. And there were three people, actually angels disguised as people, and he welcomed them into his house. And what did he tell them? What type of food did he give them? He said, "V'echa pas lechem. Come with me, I'll give you a morsel of bread. I'll give you a small amount of food to eat. It might not be such great bread, maybe coarse, but at least you'll have something small to eat." And they accepted his invitation. But what did he end up giving? Paviyikach ben Bokar Rach V'toyv. He ended up giving cattle the best possible meat from each animal. And Rashi tells us, what was that meat? Was it a hamburger? Was it a steak? He gave tongue. In fact, Rashi says, that tongue was also served with a dip, with chardal, with mustard. The Farshim wonder, why do we need to know that he served mustard? Okay, I like to put some mustard on my hot dog, but what extra message is Avraham Avinu teaching us by serving a little bit of mustard? Maybe he should have given some relish or some ketchup. And some explain that there is a reason why he gave the lashon, the tongue. And there is a reason why on that tongue was placed mustard. Because a person who loves mustard more than life itself still is probably not going to have a whole lot of it. In fact, you may very well, when it comes to Pesach, and you have mustard, which is not kosher Pesach, that's one of the few things that we don't really know what to do with, because there's so much of it, and we only use small amounts of it at a time. He was explaining that when it comes to your tongue, when it comes to your speech, put mustard on it. Mustard, which is used sparingly, so too when it comes to your speech. Em or ma'at, do not say so much. Rather, asay harbe, do a whole lot. And of course, this is as opposed to Ephron Hachiti. Avraham, who was at his most vulnerable state of his life, burying his wife Sarah, the wife that he loved, at the age of 127 when she passed away. And like so many funeral homes that take advantage of people at this time in which they are the most vulnerable, Ephron promised him the world. But what did he give him? Nothing. In fact, the word Ephron, Ayin, Pei, Resh, Nun, is the gematria, the numerical value, of the 400 zuz that he charged Avraham. As though to say that although he wished to give him this plot of land in Hebron for free, as that's at least what he told him, you could see in his essence that he was a man that only wanted a tremendous amount of money, 400 zuz, for this property. The Bartanur then continues and provides an explanation for the third and final part of this Mishnah. The Mishnah which says, V'havi mekablos kol adam, a person should receive everyone, b'seir panim yafos, with a smile. Says the Bartanura, kish'ata machnis orchim leveisecha, when you have a guest that comes to your house, lotin lahem, do not give to them food, ufanecha kvusos b'karka, with your face turned toward the ground in disgust, like you throw the food at them like a dog. Says the Bartanur, unbelievable language, shekol hanose, anyone who gives, ufanav kvusos b'karka, in such a way that it makes the person feel lousy when you're giving it to them, and feel nasan kol matana shebaolam, even if you give every single gift in the world to them, malin alav ki'ilu nasan klum, it's as though you gave them absolutely nothing, for you made them feel like complete garbage having received it. And the Gemara in Ksuvos actually explains, based on the Parshan Vayechi, that it's better to show the white of your teeth than to provide something else which is white, milk. Even though milk is filled with calcium, it'll make a person's bones strong, but even better than strong bones is feeling good. And by you giving a smile, you will lighten up that person's day much greater than any glass of milk. The Bartanura then continues and says, Shalosh Azharos Hizir Shammai. Shammai mentions three things opposite Shalosh Malos Shehizkir Yirmiyah, corresponding to the words of our prophet of Yirmiyah. When he spoke to the Chacham, to the wise individual, the Gibor, the strong individual, and the Asher, the affluent man. Keneged Chacham, opposite someone who thinks they're so wise, Omri said, Asi Teras Chakeva, keep learning. Do not think that you are brilliant, and even if you may be brilliant, and you scored a 2400 on your SATs, and you think you know everything, there's still more to learn. Do not allow your Chachma to trick you into thinking that you have nothing else to learn, that you have nowhere else to grow. Keneged Asher, opposite the wealthy individual, Amar, he said, Emer ma'at vasi harbe, I know you're a philanthropic, you're a very kind and generous individual, that you give at every appeal, and you're a tremendous philanthropist to all the yeshivos and other institutions. So therefore, that's it. What else do I have to do? I've done more than anyone else. I've given more than anyone else. Well, you were also given something. You were given the blessing of wealth. And therefore, Emor Ma'af Basi Harbe, it's not enough for you to keep bragging. Stop talking about what you do, and do more. Keneged Gibor, opposite the strong person, Omar Havi Mekablis Kol Adam, B'Saber Panim Yafos. Smile at people. Do not be a very pushy and aggressive boss. Yes, there are people that look up to you for guidance, and you can fire them in a drop of a hat. But do not be that way. Do not look at them and say, you're fired, and make them feel terrible. But rather, use your strength and your power and allow people to grow from that. Be a tremendous leader and use your qualities to improve other people around you. When we read this line of our Mishnah, I believe it really changes the perception of who Shammai really is. You see, all of Perkei Avos is written by many, many different sages. And you can think, why do we have to mention all these rabbis' names? All I need to do, if I really want a book of ethics, is I'll go to my local Barnes & Noble, and I'll pick out a book about morals, and I'll read it. And it'll be written by one author. And I'll tell you to do the following task. After you finish that book, find out a little bit about the bio of that author. Not for sure, but more often than not, I can almost guarantee, those people that write those books do not necessarily live up to what they're writing about. They may not necessarily practice what they preach. But when it comes to Perkei Avos, it's not that these people just said these words. They lived by them. And by critically studying Perkei Avos and reading each individual, you'll then have a better understanding of the life that person led and these core values that they stood by. And what was one of the statements of Shammai? Havi mekabelas kol adam b'sever panim yafos. Smile, be nice to people, be kind. But at the same time, we forget about those words of Shammai. Instead, we place our minds the more famous story, the story of Shammai and Hillel, that were each presented by an individual that said, teach me Torah al regel achas, on one foot. Shammai looked at them and said, you're crazy, get out of here. I'm not teaching you Torah al regel achas. And then Hillel took him, accepted him, and he taught him the famous line, that which is despised to you, do not do to others. That is the law, and everything else is commentary. Hillel is this great, kind, loving person. Shammai is mean. He's pushy. Chas v'shalom. Shammai lived by the words, Havi mekabel es kol adam, b'sever panim yafos. Anytime you saw Shammai in the street, he was smiling from ear to ear, the first person to say hello and good morning and give you a very warm personal feeling about him and yourself. So why then did Shammai have this attitude when someone brazenly asked him to teach him Torah al regel achas? And the answer is the different perspective that Shammai and Hillel had about teaching Torah, and kavod ha-Torah, respect for Torah and the Torah scholars. Hillel wanted people to learn. And therefore, even if they were disrespectful, he thought, maybe mitok shelo l'shma bo l'shma, maybe get the Torah in their bodies and their systems, thinking, then maybe eventually they'll become better people. Shammai said, this is disrespectful. He has no right to speak to a Torah sage, which is a direct disrespect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Hashem himself. This was the perspective of Shammai. Someone who was respectful to the Torah, to values of the Torah, he loved, he cared for, and he smiled, and he was the most cheerful individual. But to be insulting and degrading to the Torah, that he could not accept. That he would not stand for. We find this also in the fourth chapter in Brachos, the story of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Gamliel was a man that did not allow anyone to learn Torah unless they were tochel kabbara, they were pure to and through, inside and out. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, an 18-year-old kid who accepted the new position as the Nasi, as the leader, he said anyone could learn Torah. And there was so many, many people that were learning Torah. So why did Rabbi Gamliel have this attitude? There were so many people that could have learned. Because Rabbi Gamliel said, those people are disrespectful and don't appreciate Torah. So those people should not be learning. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, similar to Hillel, was more compassionate to those ignorant individuals and thought maybe by inspiring them with Torah words that maybe eventually their values would also change, would also improve. But who was right, Shammai or Hillel? Well, we hold like Hillel, so Hillel must be right, Shammai must be wrong. Says the introduction in the Baal HaTanya, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Shammai and Hillel are both correct. What do you mean Shammai and Hillel are both correct? In school, we're educated to think there is one answer. If 2 plus 2 equals 4, 2 plus 2 cannot possibly equal 5 or 3. So how could it be that two completely different opinions that are 180 degrees away from one another, how is it possible to say Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim that they're both correct? And the Baal HaTanya explains that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are both correct, but they had different perceptions of Torah and how it should be taught. Beit Shammai said, first comes Torah. As the Mishnah clearly says, Aseh Torah Chakeva. You must have Torah within you. And then is the idea of Masim Tovim, of kindness, of being cheerful to others. Beis Hillel first looked at the Midos Tovos, and then afterwards the Torah. The Tanya further explains the difference between Chesed and Gevur and Din. Beit Hillel embodied the characteristic of being of Chesed, of kindness. Toras Chesed, Alushainai. Beit Shammai, also similar to a wheel with different spokes going into the center, looked at Torah from a different perspective. From the Shimon Panim LaTorah, the 70 facets of Gevura, of Din, that the Torah represents exactness in judgment and in law. And Beis Shammai, therefore, was more harsh when it came to upholding Torah and teaching and paskening and saying what the certain laws and halachot are. Beit Hillel, on the other hand, represented Chesed. He embodied the Torah of kindness. The Zohar explains, we hold like Beit Hillel now, because we live in a generation that cannot be held on the level of Din. We need Chesed. We need Hashem to show kindness to us. Then, eventually, explains the Zohar, Yemos HaMashiach will hold like Beit Shammai, because we'll be able to then uplift ourselves to learn with Torah first, and also to be able to not live based merely on chesed, on kindness, but through gevura, through din. The Tiferes Yisrael also explains when the Mishnah says, as kol adam, every person, Beit Shammai, Shammai himself, he wasn't just nice to Torah scholars. It doesn't say, as kol ha-yehudim, as kol adam, every human being, Jew and non-Jew alike, he showed respect toward every single person. This is also the message of Rav Shlomo Karbach. Shlomo Karbach loved every single human being. Didn't make a difference if you were a Jew or you're a non-Jew. And he said, look at the Torah. How Avraham, his first prayer was to a non-Jewish sinful city the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, and that we have to embrace and love every single person, Jew and not Jewish, as Kol Adam, every single person. Rashi tells us, explaining Asei Toras Chakeva, it's not enough just to set a few moments in your day to learn. Every moment of your day, it should be keva, it should be set. And the Rambam similarly says, Asei Talmud Torah Hashoresh Va'ikar, make the learning of Torah the root and the main thing. V'chol shar asakecha nimshachim acharav, and let everything else come after it. In other words, explaining the Rambam, Maimonides is telling us that it's not that we make a schedule of our day and we say, I have a dentist appointment and then I'm going to be going there and I'm going to the library and then I have to do this tax form and I have all this other work to do. And then after that's all put in, you fit in Torah into those little points of the day. Do the opposite. Learn Torah, say I'm learning from this time and this time in the afternoon and this time at night. And then afterwards, you can fit the rest of your schedule into it, and not Torah into your schedule. So important is that one of the four questions that a person is asked after 120 years on their own personal Yom HaDin is Kavati Itim LaTorah. Did you prioritize your learning in your lifetime? It's brought down by the Beis Ephraim story that he was an individual who was very affluent, and his wife encouraged him because of their success and their business that he should spend the whole time learning and that she would be involved in the business affairs. One day came that she realized that they would make a tremendous, tremendous profit, but she needed his second opinion. And she called for him from the Beit Midrash, from the study hall. And he didn't respond. Again, didn't respond. That night, she turned to him and said, I understand that you were learning Torah, but I don't realize, you didn't explain to me, why didn't you come back? I'm sure the decision you made is fine. But you realize we lost a lot of money. We had potential money that could have been made. So a tremendous opportunity cost that was lost. So he said, I want to explain to you. He said to his wife, my dear wife, the Torah says in Parshas Chukas, Zos HaTorah Adam Kiyamus Ba'ohel, speaking about when a person dies, that there's laws of Tum and Tahara, person becomes impure being underneath the same roof. Chazal tell us that who is a person that will be successful in Torah study based on the word Zos Torah is only kiyomus bo'ohel, is when you're studying, you are memes as atzmach, you kill yourself. Doesn't mean literally to kill yourself, but you put in all of your energy, you pour your kishkas into learning Torah, everything, all your energies, everything into Torah study. That's the person who will be successful. So he thought to himself, he said, listen, I understand that you called on me, and you realize, as you said a few moments ago to me before, that it's okay that it didn't come. And the reason why it didn't come is because I wanted to perceive myself during the time that I'm learning as though I'm dead. And when I'm dead, no one is going to ask me to do anything because I'm dead. That is how I need to feel when I'm learning Torah. I don't want to be learning Torah with a cell phone and that every few minutes I'm running and I have this appointment and this. You're not going to be focused on your studying. Rather, if you're maimus as atzmacha, you kill yourself, you view yourself as though there's nothing else in the world that can distract you from the task at hand, you will be successful. Do not let life happen. So last week, I was at a meeting, and there was a person who was a director from a preschool program that I am as well, and he said that he wanted to get into his doctoral program. And I told him, I want to tell you something about a dissertation. I just finished my dissertation, my doctorate, and there's a very important piece of advice that a person by the name of Dr. Lauren Kempton gave me, which unfortunately I didn't keep, but it's still great advice. He says, what's the advice? I'll tell you. When it came to me going for my doctorate, the first 3 years is coursework. Coursework, just like a bachelor's, like a master's, it's obviously a little bit harder, but it's coursework. You get through it, and then you're on your own. Do your dissertation, it can take you a year, it can take you forever. So many people are called ABD, all but dissertation, they never finish a dissertation, because they let life happen. Said Dr. Kempton, you know, you had college for 6 hours on Wednesdays, from 4:30 to about 10 o'clock at night, not including the driving, the commute from back and forth from college. So I'll tell you, you now no longer have to go there. But in your mind, pretend as though you still have to learn those 6 hours. And no matter what happens in your day, in your life, those 6 hours are time to work on your dissertation. Nothing in the world can stop you. And although I didn't take that advice, I believe that's exactly what she was saying was the message of the Beis Ephraim. That you have to be meimisatzmo, as though there's nothing in the world that can possibly pull you away from the task at hand. That is Asi Taras HaKeva. If you want to be successful and truly make a mark in Torah learning and to actually do something of significance in Torah study, you have to envision yourself as though there's nothing that could ever pull you away from the task at hand, from Torah study. The Rabbeinu Yonah further explains this Mishnah. And he says, quoting the words of the Avoster of Nosson, he says, Kol ha'osa terasa ikar u'malachto tfeila. Anyone who makes their Torah study the most important thing in their life, and their malacha, the work that they do to make a living, is tafel, secondary. Osin also ikar lom haba. Hashem will also consider that to be the ikar in the world to come. You will be on the 50-yard line in the world to come. But if your work came first, and your Torah was secondary, Hashem will also consider that the Torah will be secondary in the world to come. Ratzalama is to say, you did no sins, you did nothing wrong, you're a perfect individual, but you didn't make the Torah the main priority of your life. Now feel im yiskalios began Eden, even though you'll merit to go to the Gan Eden, to the heavens, toughly yeshima, you'll be the nosebleeders, you'll be a bleachers, you're going to be in the area where the people look at Torah merely as tafel, secondary. Now, one of the things that the Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us, quoting Avoster of Nosson, is the way that we appreciate Torah in this world is the way that we'll appreciate it in the world to come. And with this, I'd like to explain a little bit about what is the world to come. What is Gehenim, hell, Gan Eden, heaven? Some actually explain it's the exact same thing. What do I mean? So imagine that you're a student, and you're sitting there in class learning Torah. You're learning whatever it may be. School ends at 3:30, and you have a huge clock staring right at you, and the clock says 3:25. So, that's not too bad. Only 5 minutes and I can go out and go to the beach. There's only one problem. That clock, which says 3:25, will remain at 3:25 for all eternity, forever. If you're a person that loves what they're learning, they'll look at the clock and they'll say, "Thank God I can learn and love what I'm doing and enjoy it forever." But the person who doesn't care about what they're learning and is staring at the clock, and they'll think, "Oh my God, this is terrible. Another 5 minutes, and those 5 minutes will never end." That is what Gan Eden and Gehenim is. And I believe this is the message of the Avoster of Nosson, that if you consider Torah to be tafel, secondary, in the world to come when you see the Torah, and that's what you've built yourself up to be, that Torah is only secondary, that is how it will be to you when Torah is introduced to you in the world to come. But if you're a person that Torah is the ikar, is the most important thing, then you'll be that person sitting, enjoying a geshmak learning at 325, knowing that it will remain 325 for all of time. I also believe that when the Avos Reb Nosson says the tafel, the ikar, it doesn't mean like when it comes to food. The ikar, 99% of the food, of the ingredients, and if the 19th ingredient is something else, that's the tafel. It's secondary. You don't make a bracha on that. So you can ask, well, what do you mean? The ikar is the majority of my time? I can't spend the majority of my time learning. I work, I have a living, I have a bunch of kids, I have bills, I have college, tuition, I have a mortgage. How on earth can I be learning the majority of the time? That's not what Ikar and Tafel means. To me, the Ikar means not that it's the most time you spend, but what's the main focus of your life? Because if you learn Torah, even if it's only for a few minutes, that's all you have, that's okay. But those few minutes, do you, first of all, look forward and cherish those few minutes? And also, those few minutes after you've learned, do you carry that Torah with you for the rest of your day? If you do, explains the Meiri, that's the Ikar. The Ikar is not how you spend the majority of your day. The Ikar is what you value the most in your day. And we hope, says the Avos Reb Nosson, that it's Torah. For if it's the Ikar in this world, it will also be the Ikar in the Olam Haba in the world to come. The Rambam further explains, and he says, the Rishayim Omrim Harbe, that the wicked people say so much, the Afil Ma'at Enos, and they do nothing. Just as we established before, it's like Ephron, Shenas and Akol B'Davar, he promised Abraham the world, I'll give you this Marat HaMachpelah and Chevron. Maisa lo heniach afil pruta achas min adam, gave nothing. In fact, he overcharged him over la socher, made it very difficult for him to be able to pay such an absorbent amount of money, but of course he did it because of his love for his wife. But Ephron was a person who said so much, did very, very little. Explains Rabbi Yisrael of Vizhnitz, this is the idea of a tzaddik and a rasha. Rashayim Omrim Harbe. What is the idea of that? I'm a Rasha because I speak too much. I'm a Rasha because I don't do too much. The message of speaking a lot or speaking very little really defines whether or not you are a Rasha or a Tzaddik. A Rasha speaks and praises themselves so much, and they do little because they say, I've done enough. I've accomplished it all. I'm perfect. There's no room for improvement. I am number one. A tzaddik doesn't have much to say because they realize, how much have I learned? How much have I accomplished? In comparison, I haven't really done a whole lot. And therefore, what do I have to really brag about? I have a whole lot more to do. If a person looks at a balloon, they've never seen a balloon before, and it's huge, it's blown up, feet, many feet wide and high. Wow, look at this huge mass, this huge balloon. All you need is a little pin. And you stick it in there, and it pops, and you realize there's absolutely nothing. It was empty inside. A Rasha, a person who is just filled with hot air, like this balloon, is this person who speaks so much like Ephron, acting like he's this great individual. The reality is, that shows when a person needs to brag, how low their self-esteem, their self-image, is clearly not very high. The Rabbeinu Yonah explains further that the message of this Mishnah, of speaking little, saying much, aseh harbe, is not just learned from Avram Avinu. It's learned from Hashem, from God Himself. For Abosenu zichronu mevracha, lamduwa mehakodesh baruchu, yisavu. We learn that from Hashem. Shlevtiach el v'shtei otiot. Because Hashem, when He promised that the Egyptians will be punished, He only used two letters. Done, Anochi. I, done. I will judge them. Done, two words, two letters. That's all God used when it came to speaking. But when it came to the punishment, when it came to the Makos, when it came to the Kriyas Yamsuf, we all know, Aseh Harbe. God certainly did a whole lot. furthermore, explains Rav Sadia, Rabbeinu Sadia Gon, Im kishyatiach avosein mishtei osios. If Hashem only used two letters when he promised that the Egyptians would be punished, also hem kama nisim neflos, when we eventually were redeemed from the past exile, it was only through tremendous miracles, tremendous wonders. Alagula hasidul ava. When it comes to our future exile, when we leave this gullus that we're currently in which it's written on kamadapim, on many pages, many notebooks, the kamasfarim, the kama nechamos, so many times it mentions the consolement that will occur to us in the sfarim, including Yirmiyah, and Yeshayah, Yecheskel, and the Treyasar, alachas kama kama, all the more so, kinifloyim yumasav v'nafshenu yodasmod, will be able to only fathom the tremendous miracles and wonders that Hashem will do for us. The Eishul Adam Lachashe Badavar V'lasei Saliva, you need to put this into your heart. Ki Sachar Gadol, what great reward it is, Yehlo Chelav HaBitachon, to have this level of faith, knowing that we ain't seen nothing yet. You think that the Yetzias Mitzrayim was tremendous miracles. That Hashem, of course, was someone who said little and did a whole lot. So when Hashem speaks so much, which really has to be, in comparison to His actions, very little, you can only imagine the miracles that Hashem will do for us, Emir Hashem, soon, b'mehera b'yameinu, speedily in our days. The Rabbeinu Yonah then continues and says, V'havim mekabos kol adam b'sefer panim yafos, to smile, to be cheerful, she'yar lehem panim yafos shel simcha. We have to show signs of joy, so that people care and love us and want to be friendly with us. Says Shammai, distance yourself so much from this terrible trait, the mid of kas, of anger. It's such a terrible, terrible trait. I'd like to conclude with the words of Rav Irving Bunim. He explains another interpretation when it says, "V'havi mekablis kol adam b'sever panim yafos," that a person should look at every person with a smile. He explains that when it comes to looking at an individual, don't focus on the small aspects of them, but rather look at the whole person. Look at kol adam. And even if maybe there's certain faults that person may have, don't focus on those faults, but rather look at the entire person, and you'll be very pleased by what you'll end up finding when you look a little bit harder. You give a second glance, a more critical look, and be able to find the good qualities of an individual. This explains the message of our parsha in Kazriya Mitzor. It's very difficult to understand, why is Lashon Hara such a terrible punishment? Lashon Hara is MS, you said the truth. Even though the excuse always is, but it's true, Lashon Hara has to be true. If it's not true, it's Motzi Shemra. So, Taras MS, Taras true, what's so bad about speaking Lashon Hara? Furthermore, when it comes to Saras, you have this strange skin disease, mistranslated as leprosy. What is the punishment for speaking Lashon Hara? What does one have anything to do with the other? What's the Mida Keneged Mida? So my Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Zweig, explains as follows. We know that when it comes to going to court, you say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. What's the difference in those three statements? The truth could be, if you would look at the truth being all the way from A to Z, the truth could be, I said B. To tell the truth, all the truth, is A through Z. But nothing but the truth is, don't add anything in addition to A through Z. There's two elements of lying. One is saying complete sheker out of your mouth. You say black, it's white. You say yes, it's really no. That's a blatant lie. There's even a greater lie, the distortion of reality. We find this all the time. In the media, you have an Arab that attacks a Jewish settlement, children. And what do we do but to retaliate, to protect innocent civilians? But what will end up happening is on the media, on the news, the 10 o'clock news, you'll see a picture of this little infant child, this Arab child that was killed or hurt. But you don't see the whole picture. You don't realize that really it was a mother holding her, and the mother was throwing rocks, and we had no choice but to shoot her, and she used her child as a shield. We don't show that part because we have an agenda. That's the biggest lie. The biggest lie is taking the truth and only focusing on a small aspect of it and saying this is the whole picture, when it's really not. This is the idea of abolishing hara. A person who's abolishing hara doesn't look at the person as a whole person. They focus on one small negative trait. Then they look at him and say, this is him. He is a bad person because of X. What do you mean? You don't look at the whole person. You don't. You only want to focus on one small aspect of them. What is the punishment? Beautifully explained by Rabbi Zweig. If you go to a cocktail party, it's not the right thing to do. But if Rachman al-Slan is an individual who is missing a leg, missing an arm, you may accidentally look at him and you may judge that person just because of this person's misfortunes. You never had a chance to even speak to him. You don't know anything about him. He might be the greatest individual in the world, but you don't give him a chance. You judge him based on one small aspect of his life. Says Rabbi Zweig, this is the beautiful punishment that we give this individual. We put a blotch on his skin, so that when he walks in, people will only focus on that small aspect of him. Because he only focused on a small aspect of someone else. Let him know what it feels like to be on the receiving end. Explains Rabbonim that this is the message of our Mishnah. Mekabeles kol adam b'sefer panim yafos. Don't look at the small aspects of an individual and judge them based on those small aspects of who they are. But rather look at kol adam. Look at and embrace the entire individual. Celebrate the entire person. And when you do, you'll realize that they have tremendous qualities to learn from, no matter who they may be. Kol adam b'sefer panim yafos. Enough to make you smile.